92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
Eh, all treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
At The Home Depot, we're dedicated to helping you build the skills that get your home projects done right. That's why we offer free and interactive online DIY workshops. During the live streams, our knowledgeable associates help you tackle your DIY projects no matter your age or skill level. You can learn how to install new single-pole switches, as well as standard duplex and GFCI outlets. Register for free at homedepot.com/workshops. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
Hey everybody, welcome to Performance Anxiety, part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. And before we start, I would like to thank AKG for sending us their Podcaster Essentials Kit. It includes a great set of headphones and a Lira mic. And if you're thinking about starting your own podcast, this is a high quality, low cost way to get started. This week, Laura Carbona joins us from Berlin. She's released a live album, Live from Rockpalast. That's the closest thing to a live show we've had in over a year. Why? Because it's a live album with absolutely no overdubs or corrections. And we talk about how an accidental gift of Nirvana's Nevermind changed her musical perspective, causing her to put down her flute and pick up a guitar. She also talks about why she used demo vocals in the final mix of an album to get a true take over a polished one. And I wanted her to explain the differences between European and U.S. audiences, because there is a definite distinction. Follow her on social media and pick up Live at Rockpalast on Bandcamp. Follow us at Performance ANX on social media. Give us a review and help us rise on the charts. There's merch designed by Mark Dancy of Soundgarden's Bad Motorfinger fame on performanceanx.threadless.com. Or treat us to a cup of coffee on ko-fi.com/performanceanxiety. Now let's join the conversation with Laura Carbona on Performance Anxiety on the Pantheon Podcast Network.
My name is Laura Carbona. You're listening to Performance Anxiety Podcast. I have a new record coming out. It's called Live at Rockpalast. And it's live without overdubs, and you're invited to check it out on bandcamp.com.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm excited.
Oh, God. I think that's the first time anybody's said that.
It's been a while. It's been a while since I had an interview. You know, we have a pandemic going on.
Yeah, it's hard to put a whole lot of new stuff out with that going on.
That is true.
And you don't get to get out and see people and play your shows and
that's
do what you would
true.
Normally do.
That's absolutely true. I mean, it's a totally different situation. But I just had a very, very long walk with my drummer and good friend. We have snow here in Berlin, and it's the first time that I'm seeing snow here in Berlin. Like that much snow, and it's fucking cold.
We are about to get some. We've had some here. I'll give you out my front door here.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So,
nice.
But, and we're about to get hit with some more. So thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank my friend and former guest, Andre Leo, for introducing me to your music.
Wonderful.
Without him, I probably would have discovered it eventually, because I am voracious in finding music and people related to other artists, musically speaking. Probably would have eventually discovered you, but it got hastened by Andre, and I am forever grateful to him for that, because I'm loving the music.
Oh, thank you.
And you are already one of my top favorite guests ever, because you sent me everything.
Yeah.
I have it all right here. And
wonderful.
Actual physical copies of the albums, not just download links. So
yeah.
That puts you in the top 1% of my guests already. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for the invitation. And The space you're giving to me in my art. It's exciting.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. So I want to start at the beginning. If you've heard some of the episodes, you know that I like to do kind of a career retrospective almost.
Yeah.
To find out where you are, I like to know where you've been. So when you were growing up, and you're in Berlin, but you're not from there originally.
No.
Okay. So when you were growing up, was there a lot of music in the house? Were you exposed to a lot of music? And what kind of music?
No, there was not much music in the house. I grew up in a very teeny tiny town in the countryside in southern Germany, surrounded by a forest. There was no internet, and we only had the radio.
So
radio music was what I was listening to, and we had a vinyl player and a very small connection of records. But I had to find my music, and I had to find my ways to connect to it, which was a thing. I mean, imagine growing up in a tiny village with 500 people. You don't have internet. You don't have access to a vinyl shop or whatever. I mean,
yeah.
You're grateful for what is given to you.
So you're just basically listening to what's on the radio. So what are they playing?
80s stuff. I mean, I was born end of 80s, but also rock stuff. Like, it was very diverse, but when I think back on my childhood, I'm remembering a vinyl that my dad had of Percy Sledge.
Oh, wow.
When a man loves a woman.
Oh, God, I love this. My wife loves that song.
Yes, I love it too. And he had, as I said, it was a small collection, but a whole lot of soul stuff. And I love soul music.
So it was a small collection, but a good one.
Well, yeah, it worked for me. But I also have to give some credit to church music, because we went to church on Sundays. We had to. But there was music. There was someone playing the organ and people singing. Not saying it was the best, but I mean, I love the reverb of in a church. And
yeah.
I love the melodies of a spiritual still. So that was shaping my thinking of music as well.
Is that where you started singing in the church choir?
I wish I could say that, but no. I think singing was somehow part of me being a kid, but it wasn't that present anymore when I became a teenager. And I was singing in choirs from, I don't know, maybe it was 16, 17-ish or something like this.
Okay.
But I had a very, very long break, and I think I needed the key moment of being exposed to Nirvana and listening to Nevermind, and then being completely blown away by the variety of sounds that exists in the world, and by the intention and the anger and all that emotion. So that was just like, boom.
Yeah.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah, and I remember when that came out, I was a freshman in college when that came out, and that just kind of reinvented everything for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Everything went from being this super polished, overly processed sound to going back to being raw. And I've had this discussion with a lot of people on the show. It's music tends to be cyclical, and Nirvana wasn't necessarily revolutionary as far as the things that they were playing, but the way they were doing it, the stripping everything down and making it raw and angry again, it hadn't been done in years, and it was revolutionary in a sense that people my age hadn't really heard that for years. I mean, I grew up listening to 80s. And you know, late 70s, early 80s, and it was the yacht rock sound and the hair metal sound, and it was all you know, some of it was polished turds, you know, some of it was just, it was crap that was processed and packaged to look a certain way and sound a certain way. And then Nirvana just said, nope, we're not doing that. And to hear that you know, even now that still affects people is fantastic. So were you, when did you start playing instruments? Was it, did you start with guitar?
No, I think I started, so if you want to go way back,
let's
I had to start with flute.
Oh, cool.
And I hated it. I fucking hated it. But my brother was playing it as well, and some I absolutely hated it. And we also had to play concerts and stuff, and I also hated it. And I hated a teacher, and I guess that was the point where when I said I don't want to have a teacher anymore. I want to be self-taught, and I was lucky to be so supported by my parents that I received a keyboard.
Oh, wow.
So I could play a little, but I didn't want to have a teacher, which is not always helpful.
And right. There's a comedian that he passed away, but Mitch Hedberg, one of my favorite comedians of all time, he said one of his jokes was that I try to teach myself how to play guitar, and I realized I don't know how to play, so how can I possibly teach myself?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, the same happened with the guitar. And again, it was, maybe I was 15 or so when my dad accidentally gave me this Nirvana CD, and I had no idea what to expect.
Gave it to you?
Yes, because, you know, back in the days, people exchanged records and burned them.
Yes.
So that was, I mean, that's not a nice thing. I don't want to promote that because I'm cutting my own flesh here being an artist. But it was a happy accident because then I learned about Nirvana and the way you can use guitars.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was mind-blowing from songwriting, from sounds, from the loudness of a guitar. And this is when I also wanted to have a guitar and, I don't know, connect with it.
Okay, that's fair. That's a great inspiration right there and a great starting point. When did you start playing in, or did you start with bands, or were you going out and playing in front of people on your own?
I was playing in bands, in a school band. That was my first participation in a band.
Right, yeah.
And then I was joining a cover band, which was, you know, I had a limited access to music scene.
Yeah.
Because I'm coming from this small town, so I was grateful for meeting people that had to do something with music or shared this love and this passion in a way.
Yeah.
I covered music for a very long time, which was also cool because I learned more about rock music from the 70s and how you do harmonies and layers, how to sing in front of an audience.
Yeah.
And to do this all, that was an interesting part of my way and growing into this music thing.
Well, I've always thought that being part of a cover band is actually a good way to learn how to write songs on your own songs. Because you learn from what other people have done. You learn song structure and lyrical structure and things, and it can help you writing your own stuff.
I'm very, very sure that this helped me in a way because, I mean, so many, you know, I love to sing Janis Joplin and stuff like this.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, that's still important to me in a way. Joni Mitchell and so on. It absolutely inspired, but it's also very limiting in a way, and not the way that I want to live my musical passion and how I want to stand on a stage, if you can say that.
Okay.
And entertain people, you know, even though it was an acoustic thing and was nice and good, but it was about entertaining people and giving them nice music, background music for an evening, playing at weddings, which I loved, and I still love doing that. I still love to sing on weddings. But it's limiting because the audience expects you to copy the one-on-one thing.
Yeah.
It's not my thing.
No.
Yeah. No.
But when you're out doing your own set of your own music, if you throw in a cover, then I think people are more open to an interpretation of somebody else's song.
Absolutely. And it's a total homage.
Yeah.
You know, because exactly. I can choose what means the song to me, what mm-hmm. means the song to us as a band. Why do we incorporate this into our set?
That's a good point. Because if you're at a, like you're saying, you're singing at a wedding, people want to hear the song the way it's done, because that the way it's recorded means something to them. So if you do your own
interpretation, and I respect that.
Yeah.
I absolutely respect that. Yeah. And if they want to have it, then they can get this. And there are so many insanely talented and professionals that are specialized in doing this like 100% delivering the same as the people are wishing. But
yeah,
it was good to learn, but there is a point where you feel like, maybe I need to find another way.
Yeah. Gotta do my own thing.
Yes.
Is that how you started writing your own music, or were you writing your own music the entire time?
Yes, I was creative for a very long time, but also pretty shy about this.
Yeah, I also remember
being a kid and singing in the morning about I don't know what I dreamed about. That's something I remember. But then you grew up, you become a teenager, listening to Nirvana, playing in school bands, you want to write your own stuff. And I did, but it took me a while to find the confidence to really do it. And to really say, this is mine and this is how I feel. And it took me a while. I was very, very shy about it.
How did you come up with your first album then? I mean, what was the point where you said, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to record this. I'm going to write my own music and I'm going to record it and we'll see what happens.
So before I did my solo record, I was in a punk band called Deine Jugend. It was a duo and inspired by the 80s about Deutsch-Amerikanische Freundschaft. I don't know if you know them. DAF.
Oh, okay.
You should check them out. They're fucking amazing. And we recorded two records and were pretty well known in Germany and Europe, I guess.
Okay.
In the underground scene. But at some point, I was just fed up with the limitation something sometimes has. And I sensed the deep wish to have a blank canvas and really starting all over, finding new melodies, finding new ideas and changing the language, because that project was in German. I also think German is a challenging language, especially to talk about emotions, because we Germans don't do that.
Right.
And singing about emotions, that's tricky.
I can imagine.
If you also want to do this, I don't know, in a melodic way, it's a challenge and it's not my thing. And the English language gives me another way to express myself.
Okay. Yeah, I imagine trying to be melodic. I mean, some of the German words are incredibly long and complex. I can't imagine trying to write a love song with...
Yeah, me neither.
An 18-letter word, trying to rhyme those things.
It's a challenge, and there are people that are very good at doing this.
Oh,
but
sure.
English flows to me way better. And as I said, I can express myself way easier and way clearer, and it gives me so much more.
So how did you end up recording your first solo album? How did it come out? I mean, were you demoing it and sending it out to people, or were you discovered?
Well, it was an in-the-box record, as you would say,
okay.
Done by the, my musical partner from the old project, Danny Wood, mm-hmm. the old punk okay. band. He was helping me getting this together. He was setting up a new studio, and we joined forces in creating my first record.
Now, were the songs written already, or were you going into the studio and trying to work things out in the studio?
Oh, no. We were writing them together
okay.
while recording them. You know, an in the box record means there is no band.
Right.
There is a whole lot of programming. There is plug-in guitars. And it's done way differently.
Okay.
And it was an opportunity and something cool to have also, to have someone who is helping and is encouraging me to do so. But I also knew after this experiment that the next record should be an analog one, like right. where people participate and play the instruments, because I mean it's different, right?
I wanted to mention that because it's a huge sound shift between the
yes.
two. Sirens, the first album, has and now knowing that, like you said, it was out of the box, it's definitely more, you know, drum machine feel, mm-hmm. Samples, beats. It's actually got kind of like an 80s goth feel to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, I love that. I love the 80s. I also love drum machine. I love gated reverb on,
yep.
on a snare drum. Pff, love that.
Take me down to the house of Silky Road, just bring me to the house and please don't wake me up. When I sleep, oh boy, just wake me up and we will sing them all.
I mean, it was a playground, which is great because I could, I mean, also the variations of songs that are on Sirens, not every song is still joining me on the journey or is in
right.
the set list. But that's also a luxury of having the opportunity to test out what works for me in the moment and then realizing what wants to grow with me.
Were you going out and playing these songs live with a full mm-hmm. band after you recorded
yes.
it?
Yeah.
Oh, so you actually had to put a band together afterwards
yeah,
then?
Yeah, afterwards,
wow.
yeah.
Okay. It's a lighter, poppier sounding album than MTC, except for, you know, with a couple exceptions, like Plan of Attack. It's actually the end of that song is crazy. I love mm-hmm. that. It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
So did you go into the recording the MTC with the band that you had put together to tour Sirens with?
Yes. Yeah.
So basically the same people?
Yes.
Now, were you writing together or were the songs
oh, no.
on MTC just you?
I was writing on my own. Between Sirens and MTC happened a huge shift, actually a huge crisis.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I mean, that's the explanation why MTC sounds so much heavier and cathartic.
That's the word I was going to say, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some stories behind these songs, and I want to ask you about them, because I know there's a story behind MTC, the title track.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of hoping you could maybe tell it to me in your own words about how you came up with the lyrics and the recording of it, because I think you recorded it in a hotel room and then you ended up using those vocals on the final track?
That was Who's Gonna Save You.
Oh, okay. Who's Gonna Save You? Okay, so I'm getting my tracks mixed up here.
Thank you.
Okay, so how did that come about?
MTC or in general? You know, as I said, there happened a crisis between those two records and huge shifts and huge questions. So writing the MTC was also a journey of finding answers that I was looking for, like existential answers. Okay. And there was so much heaviness and so much sadness that needed to make its way out.
Okay.
And I was writing the songs for the record, most of them in my bedroom, some of them in LA as well later.
Okay.
And when I wrote them, or in general when I write, I feel like I'm opening up something and receive a flow and let this flow out again. Oh. Through my voice. And being so much into the songs and the mood of the songs, it sometimes happens that the demo vocals are just the truth. And
okay.
I cannot reproduce this spectrum of truth in a studio where there is a better microphone, a better room, and so on. And I chose quite often to go for the truth of emotion instead of the technology or the
cleaner vocal, maybe.
Absolutely, yes.
It wasn't giving you the same emotion that the demo version was.
It's, you know, I'm not an actress, and I don't know how it works being an actress. That said, and I'm also singing my own songs on stage with an intensity that is inspired from the moment of birth.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something different being present in this moment of birth, receiving whatever wants to leave my tongue and be sung or said. For example, it happened with Who's Gonna Save You.
I
arrived in Los Angeles for the first time ever in my life.
Okay.
On my own, and I had a very scary night because there was a storm. I had no idea how intense storms can be in LA.
Yeah,
the stupid European being that we have a storm. I know storms.
Yeah.
No problem. But I had no idea that if they send out a weather report for a big storm, it means that palms are breaking like sticks.
Yeah.
And so I was on my own in this house in LA. I was fucking jet lagged and just new to this everything, and a bit anxious about the noises that I was hearing from outside, the storm that was rattling on the windows. So I thought the best idea is to open up a Red and to sing or try to find the lyrics for Who's Gonna Save You. So I did.
Wow.
But if you listen to it, you hear my voice cracking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's anxiety. That's like a window that was just like crashing and me being like,
wow.
While singing. And I mean, that's what this is about, right? How
yeah.
can I reproduce this in it? I can sing it better, sure. But it's not about being better all the time. It's about the truth and the honesty, right?
It's not about, like we had mentioned before, it's not about giving the most polished take. It's giving the most honest
yes,
take.
Absolutely.
It definitely comes across. And was that song completely written and you were just singing it at that point, or were you writing it and singing it while at the same time?
I was writing the instrumental before I left.
Okay.
Germany and arrived and knew that this is a song I want to work with, but I didn't have any lyrics. That was a moment or a document of the night. And
wow.
I love the fact that intuitively perhaps my mind and spirit was laying the ground for this scary or anxious night. Yeah, I mean that happens. If you let creativity flow and trust into the process, you help yourself getting things aligned. It's magic, and you can't explain it.
That's incredible. Wow. Now, knowing that now, that just brings that song to a whole different level for me. Yeah. That's just amazing.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
You're working on this album, and you've got this. So you've actually kind of become comfortable with the band that you're playing with now, because you guys have played. You toured behind Sirens, and then you've got the same band in the studio for MTC. So you're actually getting a lot more comfortable with the band. Was that part of? Is that what allowed you to open up musically a little bit? Because this album MTC sounds a lot heavier. There's feedback. There's a lot of heaviness to the album musically. A lot of experimental stuff going on musically, more so than Sirens. Was that because of your familiarity with the band that you were playing with?
No, I think it was because I was working on my own.
Okay.
On the demos and on the record, and there was an idea shaping up how I wanted it to sound. And, you know, this album is driven by anxiety, pressure, release, chaos, dystopia, I don't know what. And it sounds like this to me. It's painful. I actually wanted to, I said to the engineer in the studio when we were recording, Cellophane Skin, for example, it has to be uncomfortable for the listener's ears. I had the wonderful experience to record at Rama Tone Studios in Mannheim, and they're very well known for their noise recordings and cool. For their analog record. Like, they're the pros in Germany.
That's awesome.
I'd say. But I mean, I was just lucky because I lived in Mannheim, and they were close, and yeah. I could make this happen. But I mean, it was a great match because They had crazy feedback stuff, crazy analog effect things. And again, it was like a playground. I loved being able to touch the things with my hand. I also remember when we recorded, I don't know, which song, it must have been MTC. I was allowed to go to the Culture Walsche. That's the... It's an analog rack.
Okay.
And it distorts a guitar or a sound big time. And I could intuitively be on the... Help me with the word.
The dials?
And the dials, yes. I was listening to what the guitar player was doing, and I knew when I wanted to have it more and less distorted. And it was live recorded, so there was no way back. And it was my intuition... Mm-hmm. Bringing in more feedback or less, but
so,
I mean,
so you were basically on the board listening while they're playing and kind of producing the stuff yourself.
Well, I wouldn't go that far because there was Christian Bethke who was recording this, and
they gave you the freedom to mess around with stuff.
He gave me the absolute freedom, and that was something amazing to receive as a human in this world where someone gives you the opportunity. Like, I know you're new to this world of analog technology. Look, I have this rack here, and that's the way it sounds. This is what you can do. Test it out, and we're going to go for what you want.
That's awesome.
That's wonderful. That's how it should be, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. And that's a testament to your talent, that he actually had enough faith in you to go and say, hey, I think you know what you're doing well enough that you know what sound you want. Go play with this and find the sound you want.
I mean, that's respect, I guess. But also my respect towards him, because sometimes I was also grateful for being served with opportunities.
Right.
Because that needs talent. He needs to know what his resources are, mm-hmm. and what he can offer me. And then giving me the choice, that's something pretty nice.
One of the things I really like about MTC is that you've got an element of Americana to the sound. There's, mm-hmm. I hear a lot of, like, it's kind of like Chris Isaac meets shoegaze.
Oh. Yes.
And it's really cool. And you've got a bit of that on Sirens, but it really intensifies a lot on the MTC. Particularly, like you mentioned, the song Cellophane Skin, that, you know, you've got some brutal blasts of feedback on that. But it's just, it's really great. What was Chris Isaac and shoegaze, were those things that you were listening to, or is that stuff that you're taking an influence from?
Yeah, I mean, I love Chris Isaac. I love romanticism. I love desire. I love shoegaze. I love noise. I love aggression. And I love the combination. I love the highs and the lows of the possibilities that are given to me.
And you end up actually touring the U.S. and in Europe. Did that have an effect on the music at all? Did that influence the Americana sound for you? Because it's a lot of the music sounds kind of like it belongs in the desert.
I think this has always been part of my dreams.
Okay.
And where it's a huge resource of inspiration to me. But my very first time being in the States was 2016 for South by Southwest.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And I was already in the writing for MTC, I guess. But you remember South by Southwest, that's just an impression of this huge country and how it looks. Being in LA for the first time for a couple of weeks in 2017, I think, was 17, yes.
Wow.
That was something that really, it felt like, you know, you're dreaming about something. And my dreams are very intense and very clear. But once you're there and you're inhaling this air, and you hear the sounds, and you really can see through your own eyes how much vibrance there is in the vastness, that has an effect on you for sure.
I wanted to ask you about touring and playing live with a few people and see if wondering if that had an effect on how you play some of your songs live, because some of the songs transformed a lot from the mm-hmm. album versions to the live versions. You know, I'm looking at the live album here, Live at Rock Palast, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. I see it on YouTube all the time, but I've never know if I'm
Rock
saying.
Rock Palast was good.
Okay, good.
Rock Palast.
I never know if
it
I'm
was good.
But so you toured with artists like Jesus and Mary Chain and The Pains of Being Pure at Heart. Did that affect how you play some of your older stuff live and transform it into a more of a band-centered song, more powerful?
It for sure gave me new... give me a moment.
Sure. And while you're thinking, the one that stands out to me is the song Swans. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. track on the album, but it kind of goes to a different place on the live album.
Oh, that are surrounding me right now, like Brody Meiswein, Jeff Collier, and Mark Eric Lewis, they're sent from heaven. And they decided to play in my band, and I just found them when I moved to Berlin, which isn't that long ago, like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
They came to me after MTC was recorded. Actually, I found Brody because there was I needed bass stems for the MTC because we had to redo them again.
Oh,
and
wow.
So I connected with Brody. Also, I committed to a tour. And realizing I need a new band. Like, oh, my band wow. is not joining me on the move, which was fine because there is an end in many things, and this was fine to be an end.
Yeah.
So I met Jeff and Brody when I moved to Berlin, and they instantly joined me on the road. And it's the very first time that I have the pleasure to share the stage and the rehearsal room with people with such a talent and such a spirit and such a heart. That makes a difference when yeah. the intention and the vision aligns with okay. my own. So I'm very proud actually that there is this live recording that lifts up everything that I have recorded with other people before, because there is a difference when there is a different intention from more energies than just one in creating something.
Yeah, it sounds like they have completely taken ownership of the songs on their parts on the songs.
I mean, I love what they're doing. I'm a fan of their unique sound and technique, and they have their space in the songs and on stage, and I'm grateful if they shine.
And they do. And I wanted to ask you something, because I read this, and I just want to make sure this is true, because this is amazing to me if it is. The live album has no overdubs.
No.
Wow.
Of course not.
That's,
no.
You didn't go back and correct anything. That's
no.
amazing.
I mean, we're in 2021.
Yep.
And we have all resources and possibilities and to record whatever we want. But isn't honesty, again, and emotions what this all is about? There is no, there is, art to me is like a clear channel of character or of sounds and spaces, and it gives me nothing to listen to something perfect, even knowing that this is polished. Or so many
Thank
people
you.
That are, yeah, I mean, so many people that are doing live concerts right now. I saw something for Eurosonic Norderslang, which is a showcase festival, and I had a peek into this. And there are musicians that play their showcase of three songs with pretending this is a live thing, but you can hear this is process.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, doing something on the EQ, go for it. Do
right.
it. Do something on the mix. Excellent. We also did that. I mean, that's was something very special.
Mixing process.
Yes, but going over vocals, I mean, if there is something painful, a spot, do it.
Yeah.
But don't use the iron on art. That's to me not art. This is not what I'm going for.
Well, this is fantastic, because in we haven't had live shows in a year.
Yeah.
And so if you want to hear a live show, buy your album. Buy Live at the Rock Blast, because it's a true live album. There is
yes.
no fixing of guitar solos or anything like
no.
that. It's a true live representation. That to me means more than anything, because so often, like you're saying, people will go back and they'll listen to, oh yeah, we got to release a live album. Oh, that guitar solo screwed up. Let me go in the studio and I'll fix this 10 seconds of this guitar solo, and then we'll put it out. And there's none of that. And I
no.
appreciate that more than I can even put into words.
That's what it's about, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know if you ever heard about Rock Palast before, but when I was a teenager, I watched Rock Palast. It's a live television, not program, but a series that happens to be screened late at night on the weekend. And I was seeing Sonic Youth there. I was seeing Placebo, The Smashing Pumpkins.
Love Placebo, yeah.
And amazing artists. And that was next to MTV and the radio, something that really, wow, blew me away. And it was live concerts, you know? I was dreaming about having the opportunity to play at Rock Palace at some point in my career. And then the invitation came, and we had the show 2 weeks after we returned from our huge North America tour. And that evening was just that day was crazy, because I knew this day is about fulfilling a dream. Don't fuck this up. So I was pressuring myself so much, and I was so scared because I knew this is live on television as well. Wow. So my parents were watching, every parent of the band was watching, all friends, like it was eyes on us.
Wow.
And I also love this because when we start the set, I hear my tension in my voice.
Yeah.
And I just hear how I'm not relaxed yet, how it still feels cold, and how I still need a moment to I don't know, send some warmth into the audience and also relax them a bit. And that's so wonderful. You know, I know speaking about this, I can do it better. Fuck this. This is the reality of playing a show that's live on television, which is a dream come true, and you're doing it and you're enjoying the 90 minutes that are airing right now. And during the show, I mentally had to pinch myself a couple of times when I realized like what's going on, like we're really doing this. Or between the encores when we left the stage, I was blown away. And and the most amazing thing was, even when we were still on stage playing the encore, I knew this was an outstanding show. Like it felt amazing. We played amazing and celebrated the night because of such a relief, a show. And I remember driving back to Berlin on the next day, and Mark and Brody were watching the show from the night before. And sometimes they would take off their headphones and be like, oh man, that was fuck this. And I was sitting in front of them, and I was so tense, like is it all fine, because I needed their approval again to hear like that was a great show, in order to confront myself with this experience again, because sometimes your head makes things a little bit nicer than they actually are. And it was nice to realize, oh, it was a really good show.
Did you intend, did you go in to the show intending to record it and release it as an album, or was that something afterwards?
That was a Corona fight or fly idea that Jeff, my drummer, provided me with, because, you know, we had such a big year lined up, such a big 2020. And when COVID hit, the first thing I had to do was canceling the studio for our third record. And I mean, I don't want to go into the depth, because everyone has to let go of something. Yeah. And this was just in May. We were planned doing in May. So Jeff called me one evening, and I was having really dark moments, as I guess we all had.
Yeah.
And he made a very long introduction. And at some point he said, think about it, but what do you think about asking WDR what they think about releasing a live record? And I was so confused and thought, yeah, okay. I don't think they're going to give us the stamps, but why not? I mean, it's a crazy time. I can do that.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about the proper way to compose an email, a respectful email in gratitude for the evening that was given to me. And also saying, like, I'm an artist. Like,
This is how I make my living.
And however, it took me 3 days to compose the message, and I heard back 2 hours after I sent it out with a clear yes.
Wow.
Yes. That was...
That's amazing.
Unexpected. And I also didn't think that they would provide us with the stems.
Okay.
You know, I thought they said, okay, the live television mix is yours. You can press that. But
right.
They were super cool about giving us the stems so I could invite Scott to work on the mix and bring this closer to my sound world.
That's amazing. That's so generous.
Yes.
And not to bring anything down, but I also heard that you guys got robbed on the tour before.
Oh, yes.
The show. Is that true?
Yes.
Oh.
We got robbed twice in 2019. We had a short US tour in March. That was, in retrospect, it's such a crazy trip because we were opening the new Colossus Festival in New York. That was in March.
Cool.
And I had wonderful days in New York before. That's something that I do, especially when there is a time difference. I go a little bit earlier and check the vibe of the city.
Yeah.
To blend in a little bit better. However, we started in New York and then flew to California, played LA and San Francisco. And on the way back to LA, we had a wonderful brunch with a friend of the band close by the ocean.
Oh, wow.
And a beautiful walk by the ocean. And I go crazy if I see water. And then we returned back to the van and they broke in and stole only one backpack,
which
was painful, but I mean...
It could have been a lot worse.
Yes, it got worse when we went to the States the second time, which was in September. We played LA, had already an off day and stayed on the border in California, Arizona. I had a beautiful Dolce Vita off day and woke up in the... my tour manager knocked on my door in the morning and he said, hey, sweetie, you might want to get dressed. The police is outside. We got robbed.
God.
Oh, my God. And I was, are the guitars there? Like what? And I got outside and the band and they already, you know, they only needed me to as the last one to enter the scene and be like, okay, it's my tour. happened. But we got robbed.
God, I'm
painfully.
Sorry. Stay away from the West Coast, apparently. Next time you come to the US, just stay on the
man,
East Coast.
But I love California, you know. And I'm pretty good in forgiving, I guess. And
Well,
it was an experience, and we became wiser in how we should do this. But I mean, looking back, it was part of it.
Unfortunately, going back to your second album, Empty Seat, you put out a companion piece of photography.
Yes.
With the album. How did you get into that? Have you always been into photography? And how did you decide to put a book together to go with the album?
That was also an idea I received from the boss of my North American label, which is super cool dude, Gord, and a fan of my art and my photography.
Awesome.
And he gave me the impulse and it was a no-brainer to me. But sometimes you need to have an impulse in execute something. And I was grateful to receive that and then dove into this. And that was, I always call it my demon's little brother, because I said
like
it before, MTC is a soundtrack about a crisis.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a visual component about this as well.
From the photos that I've seen on your Instagram, because fortunately for you, unfortunately for me, the book is sold out and I can't get one. But from the work that I've seen on your social media and stuff, you're very talented. And I I hope you do, when the third album comes out, I hope you do something similar, because I would love, being a photographer myself, I would love to see the work that you're continuing to do.
Thank you. I mean, I'll have a look into my archive, what I can do about the book.
Yeah. And quarantine photos.
Yeah, I mean, it's a part of me experiencing the world, to document it in a way. And of course, I continued taking photos, landscape ones or photos about my trip. And I'm already showing them on my Patreon, because I started writing about our tour as well, and using the photos that I did on this journey. And I rarely work with artists and capture their moments. I had a beautiful photo experience with Lucy Kruger.
Oh,
in
I love
summer.
Lucy. Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was a very intense project that we did together. And I love to photograph families and couples. Not speaking of a romantic relationship,
but
people that have a special connection with each other. So yeah, I'm continuing doing it.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm gonna have to keep an eye out for that stuff, because I'm really you actually hit a lot of this stuff that I like, but I don't like to do. I don't like photographing. I love doing landscapes, nature stuff as well. I love doing live music photography. That's I've always loved doing that, and I've been lucky enough to be able to do it a few times. So your photography is similar in certain aspects, but you also like weddings. You talked about singing at weddings. I absolutely despised photographing weddings. It was just the worst.
That's something different, because then you're there for a job and you have to deliver, I don't know, 300 photos and this and that. Like, I'm not speaking about this, but capturing a part of someone's life, for example.
And there's no redos.
No. I mean, a wedding is,
it's
is
once.
A milestone
it, it's gone.
To people. Get right, and they have their vision. And like, this is not what I'm talking about, but speaking about a newborn entering the world, or speaking about a woman being pregnant, or a mother, a father and daughter being together, you know, those bonds between a family. And I love to document this, but also giving them some safe space, because it's not natural to everyone to stand in front of a camera if you're not a model. So you want to feel warmth and the trust, and you also want to trust into the eyes of the photographer. And I love giving the trust to people, and to just document what they're doing, or what they are trying to document in a visual way, what they're experiencing, why having a baby in their womb. I mean, it's a big how can you do that? But I'm trying to document their experience.
It's a similar experience to the live show, like the live album. You've got these babies, which are your songs, and you're giving them to the audience, and you want that trust that they're going to react in a positive way to them. And that's a question I had about the touring that you've done. You've toured US and you've toured Europe a lot. Mm-hmm. And in the recording, the live album, the audience sounds very polite and very enthusiastic, but they wait till the end of the song's done.
Yeah.
And then they applaud, which in my experience is a lot different from American audiences, which will scream and yell throughout the entire song. have you found a difference between the two audiences?
I mean, there are cultural differences. I also experienced it for the very first time, that people were starting dancing to my music in Bisbee, Arizona. They still danced in Tucson and in Dallas as well.
That's
so
awesome.
I was happy to see this, but this is not happening in Germany. It's just a different culture and how they receive and behave being exposed to music. But in general, I really like this, if people are so attentive that they give space to the music.
Yeah.
and show the respect to let it fade out. But I guess that's also the way of how I'm performing and how I guide my audience through a live set.
Okay.
Through a seance or a serenade. So I'm very aware of what happens in the audience, and I really try to give them the room to have a most wonderful experience.
The live album does what all my favorite live albums do. It kind of gives new life and a different perspective on some of these songs. And some of them are completely transformed, like Night Ride, for example. It's a great track on the album, but live, it sounds like something from The Doors. Robbie Krieger on guitar. It's just, are there songs on the album that had to be left off because of the time constraints or anything? Because it's a 10-track album. And
yes.
Did you have to leave anything off? Is there anything that's on the cutting room floor?
Yes. Due to the fact that I'm not a fan of a double vinyl.
Yeah.
I was the one who said, like, this is our limit and we can only bring those songs in. So... Mm-hmm. In reality, Cellophane Skin was the first encore. Then Crisis was following, and a cover of Aretha Franklin's "Never Loved a Man the Way That I Love You."
Oh,
did
wow!
Did you listen to it? It's on the digital services, and also I think on Bandcamp.
Check that out, because I've just been listening to the physical copy that you sent to me. So
that was me. I didn't want to have a double vinyl because it's also more waste for environment, and I'm not a fan of walking to the vinyl player and changing the records, because I think don't interrupt music when it's going on.
Exactly.
You know?
So for the most part, this is a fairly pretty accurate set list. These are songs that you would normally play on on tour. So it's,
I mean, the thing is, we had a very luxurious problem of having too much time, so we had to stretch the songs, and that's also something nice, because there are a whole lot of experiments on the record, and no one knows, because we really had to extend songs.
That's awesome.
Filling this up. And you really should listen to the cover of Ain't Never Loved a Man. It's a very doomy Sabbath, kind of very dark and gloomy version. A very loud one, and the band has the grande finale for themselves. Like, I'm leaving them for, I don't know, 2 minutes, so they can do their thing, and I'll be like, bye.
I am checking that out as soon as we wrap up.
Yes, so man. I think this version might be 9 minutes long or something like this.
Wow.
So maybe we have the opportunity to, I don't know, bring out an EP in the future. I don't know. But that would make a wonderful B-side.
Yeah. That, well, I'm going to check that out as soon as we're done here. So, and we're getting close. I've kept you for quite a while, so I do appreciate all the time you've given me. You mentioned a third album. Mm-hmm. Are you working on anything? I mean, you said you had was it a third album that was basically written, just not recorded?
Mm-hmm.
Has a plan for that changed? I mean, are you going to eventually record it, or are you going to work on something else?
I'm a big fan of the songs that got born before the pandemic. But the pandemic helped me inviting new perspectives in a global collective kind of way. And I also have to admit that in retrospective, I'm very grateful for this forced pause, because, I mean, it was too much of a rush. You know, this hamster wheel where humans tend to be too quick, I realized I shouldn't be in this and shouldn't force myself to be in this and shouldn't pressure myself if I'm working creatively. So the time that now was giving to me and to us as band is something very wonderful, because this will enrich every song that has been written before and every word and sound that is leaving my mouth and our fingers. Like, it's time is a gift, and patience as well. So I'm very much looking forward of a healed world and the possibilities to go in a studio with 5 people to do a record the way I would love to record it, you know, as live as possible.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and make sure you document it with some photographs while you're doing it.
I will do it. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for spending part of your evening with me and explaining everything behind this. I absolutely love the live album. I love the studio stuff, but the live album just hits me even more powerfully. The songs are just incredible. So I highly recommend everybody go check it out and pick up a copy, because if you want to experience a live show, that's as close as you're going to get, because there's no overdubs and you can't go out and see a live show anyway. So pick up Laura's album Live at Rock Palast. So thank you so much for spending some time with me and just chatting. It's been great.
Thank you. And thank you to the listeners for listening to us having this conversation.
Of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
All because of a fancy bike?
It's not just a bike. Peloton makes treadmills too.
All treadmills are the same.
Our treadmills can adjust speed and incline automatically, so you never break your stride. Whether you're squeezing in a power walk or training for a marathon, Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try the Peloton Tread risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
At the Home Depot, we're dedicated to helping you build the skills that get your home projects done right. That's why we offer free and interactive online DIY workshops. During the live streams, our knowledgeable associates help you tackle your DIY projects no matter your age or skill level. You can learn how to install new single pole switches, as well as standard duplex and GFCI outlets. Register for free at homedepot.com/workshops. The Home Depot, how doers get more done.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.